I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, This, I Believe, returns to NPR. The award-winning radio series is back with new essays by listeners who want to tell us what they're all about. Series curator Jay Allison is going to tell us later how listeners can submit their contributions and be part of it. And Grammy Award-winning singer, songwriter Regina Bell releases her first gospel album. But first, Haiti. If you follow the news, you've certainly heard about the threat of starvation after that deadly cyclone in Myanmar, and also the concerns about the cost of food and gas here in the U.S. But meanwhile, in Haiti, one of the first countries where the worldwide spike in food costs has had an impact, the food crisis continues. The cost of basics like rice, beans, fruit, and condensed milk has gone up by 50% over the past year, sparking riots across the country. Also rising are fears that Haitians are so desperate that they will risk the dangerous trip to the U.S. Here to talk about this, the Reverend Jesse Jackson and journalist E.R. Shipp. They were part of a delegation that recently visited Haiti to assess the problem. Welcome to you both. Thank you both so much for speaking with us.
Yes, hello.
How are you?
Reverend Jackson, first tell us briefly what made you take this trip. And certainly you've been to Haiti many times. What prompted this trip?
Well, the food riots, which, destabilized the government. The prime minister was removed from office in rebellion. And there are three dimensions to these riots, whether it is in Yemen or Burkina Faso or Egypt, and now around the world, is that, A, we have a moral obligation to respond to the desperation, and we have the capacity to do so, I might add. Secondly, they are destabilizing democratic governments. But thirdly, there's a homeland security issue, because when these riots emerge out of desperation, that's when the al-Qaeda-type forces move in. We would do well to engage in food boat diplomacy on the front side rather than gunboat diplomacy reacting to riots on the backside.
E.R. Shipp, what struck you about your trip to Haiti, and why did you want to go?
Well, I was curious, and when I got there, I was struck by how impoverished people were, but also among the poverty, there were bits of hope. And people really did want to meet with Reverend Jackson's delegation to express that. One of the more interesting things was when we visited Cité Soleil, one of the large slums in Port-au-Prince. And as we were leaving a community center to go to a medical center, which are both beacons of hope there, people just kind of fell in line as if we were marching in New Orleans or something, because they were glad that somebody was paying attention to them.
And E.R., you sent us back some pictures from Cité Soleil, but if you would just describe some of what you saw there, and we'll post those on our website, but just tell me some of what you saw there. Is it visible that people are weak from hunger? Is it obvious that there's malnutrition?
In some cases, in fact, Reverend Jackson can tell you about a baby he held at the medical center. And that was one example. You also see people who are very much undernourished, particularly children, as you walk through the neighborhoods. But in some areas, you find piles and piles of garbage. There's been no government pickup of garbage. And in the garbage, you'll find goats roaming around trying to find something to eat. You'll find dogs roaming around trying to find something to eat. We saw lots of that. We saw open sewers with waste. We saw crumbling concrete that would have been roads or sidewalks and such. People are living on those and building shanties out of any material they can find.
70% of the people make a dollar a day or less. And 60% of the women are chronically malnourished. And that drives up the very high infant mortality rate and short life expectancy. I held babies in my arms 5 months old that weighed 15 pounds, literally dying in front of our faces. And what is compounding the concern I have is that things can get better for them. There is deforestation. They cut down all the trees to make charcoal, to sell charcoal as a way to make some money, and that affects the climate in the region. I'm convinced of that. But the second point is that we dropped heavily subsidized U.S. rice on that market and drove their rice farmers out of business. They have the capacity to feed the entire Caribbean region. They have three crops a year capacity, and yet our own quote-unquote liberal trade policies have driven their rice and wheat farmers out of business.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with the Reverend Jesse Jackson and journalist E.R. Shipp about their recent mission to Haiti. So, Reverend, that leads me to my question. First of all, were you able to meet with Haitian President René Préval? I mean, you mentioned that the prime minister was forced out because of the criticism about the government's response to the situation. What about the president?
Interesting, you know, I asked him, I said, what things do you need as priorities right now? He said the first priority is help us fight the drug flow. He said the drugs are corrupt. The drug lords have more money than the government has. We have one airport, Port-au-Prince. They may have 12 landing strips in the country. And they come from Colombia right through Haiti on the way to Miami and to America. And so we need to really joint venture to stop the drug flow. It is very damaging. He said, secondly, for the Haitians who are in America, been there since 1990, who want temporary status, we need to stop deportation because nearly half of their budget is from remittances of Haitians who live in America who send money back home. The third is to keep the HOPE 2 program alive so that those who can sew garments can sell their product in the American market, a way of employment. But the fourth is that the debt service is $75 million a year, which they cannot pay.
Is that unilateral? Is that unilateral debt, U.S. to Haiti, or is that the World Bank?
No, it's not. It's U.S. and it's World Bank and the like. But
it's a $1.7 billion, I believe, deficit that they have.
And it was no fault of this government. And the thing about it is that when they are positioned to have to borrow money from us, they then must buy our product with what they borrow. So they have to buy our rice packaged in the U.S., shipped by the U.S., and so what is a dollar becomes 50 cents because we get half of it back, and we're heavily subsidized. And the last one, of course, they need, for this year, they need rice and wheat and cooking oil to not starve to death. They really want tractors for their infrastructure, and they want irrigation so they can begin to farm. They really have a great sense of pride. They want to be self-sufficient. Right now, they're into sustained structural poverty.
So what you're saying is that there are international sort of economic, financial arrangements that have, in fact, diminished their capacity to feed themselves. And that's one structural problem that has to be addressed. Is there any usefulness for an immediate grassroots effort on the part of U.S. citizens who are concerned about this? Or is the more pressing issue addressing these long-term structural problems?
The long-term issues will indeed be just that, long-term. There is an emergency need now for food. And that was one of the things that led to some of the riots in April. An example is that there was a 40% rise in rice prices over the last 6 months. So what used to be, it was going for about $60 for a 100-pound sack of rice just before the riots.
So a $10 sack of rice, Michelle, in the States will cost $60 there, though they make a dollar a day or less.
Right. And one of the things that President Préval wants to do is to reduce the price of rice for at least 6 months. He thinks that his government, particularly with a new prime minister coming on board, needs at least 6 months to try to sort some things out. But there's an emergency need for food. That does not mean, however, that people should start sending canned goods over, because whatever they send over may never reach the people, may end up on the docks.
Mm-hmm. World Food Service said they may not run out of food within a month. You know, the flip side of the crisis of the food issue, whether it is Haiti or Yemen or Burkina Faso or Niger or Nigeria, is the opportunity for the U.S. to become, in some sense, the good partner. This is a great moment, since we have an agricultural surplus, to do what al-Qaeda cannot compete with us in doing, and that is feed hungry people and show ourselves friendly. That's why a food boat diplomacy would be a great asset for us on the front side, as opposed to gunboat diplomacy when there are riots and when there is rebellion. We also find that when these small countries are now turning their corn production into ethanol, as opposed to feeding, because they get more money from ethanol, that becomes I think, an unintended consequence of trying to move from oil to ethanol.
Reverend, I just wanted to ask, have you had an opportunity to make this case to any officials in the government, in the State Department, and what has been the reaction? And Frank, and also wanted to know whether any of the presidential candidates, in your view, have addressed this matter.
I called Secretary of State Rice and talked with her. She directed me to meet with the USAID, and their program is good but inadequate. I mean, children walking 4 and 5 miles to school a day, they've cut back on the school feeding program. One thing we want to do is to begin to determine how much it will cost for a child to get 2 meals a day and books at school, a kind of adopt-a-child program. Because if the children have food at school, A, it's an incentive to come to school, B, it's nutritional, and 3, they're off the streets where the potential of rebellious forces engaged in rioting. What a great opportunity for us, again, to get food and books to the children of Haiti. And I might hasten to say that Haiti in our relationship is the creditor, and we're the debtor. We would all be speaking French today had not Toussaint Louverture defeated Napoleon and the French in Haiti to stop slavery there, defeated them twice, as a matter of fact. Because of those victories, it drove France out of the hemisphere. It enabled us to get the Louisiana Purchase, all land west of Mississippi for $1 an acre. The French quarters in New Orleans built by African, yep, French-speaking Haitians, and then they were our ally in the Battle of Savannah. I said it to say that, yes, we have a huge historical relationship here, and we've not honored it.
Reverend, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much for speaking with us to bring attention to the situation, to keep the spotlight on this. Reverend Jesse Jackson is the founder and president of the Rainbow Push Coalition. We were also joined by E.R. Shipp, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. They recently returned from Haiti, where they were on a fact-finding tour. I thank you both so much. They joined us from Chicago. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.